Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
So we've been visiting with artists at the Getty Sing Conference in Nashville. And our next guest is Andrew Osenga. He's a singer-songwriter. Andrew, thank you so much for stepping aside. I know you had some responsibilities helping out with some of the sessions. So thanks for stepping aside and chatting with us today.
What an honor.
Well, tell us a little bit about your background. We have a largely Lutheran audience. Tell us about the tradition you come from.
Yeah, well, I grew up a fundamentalist kid in a church in a cornfield in Illinois.
Nice.
Literally surrounded on all four sides by corn. Sort of a mixture of fundamentalism and farm superstition, I would say.
Oh.
And yeah, it was hardcore.
That's quite a recipe.
Wow.
It was. There's a lot to unpack and a lot to undo. And I've spent a lot of time doing that. And then have meandered through a lot of different things. I think life is a series of changes and you know, you continually learn and grow. And then became got to college, became a hardcore 20-year-old Calvinist who knew everything and loved to tell everyone that he knew everything. Without, you know, those people, they're super fun to hang out with.
Oh yeah.
Thankfully that didn't last too long. Grew out of that phase. I didn't get any tattoos during that phase, which was very wise. And then have the last 10 years or so been a part of an Anglican community. So sort of cousins to our Lutheran friends, and have loved that, being a part of the Anglican world and diving into the liturgies and being connected to something a lot more foundational and a little less tied to the product cycle has been very healing, and been very grateful for that.
Awesome. Yeah. We're at a conference that's all about hymns right now.
Yeah.
Tell us about your relationship with hymns. How have hymns shaped your faith in life?
You know, it's one of the most interesting things about hymns is that I grew up singing hymns in this old church in the middle of a cornfield, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I sing a lot of the same songs now. And it's interesting. I've traveled as a musician for 25 years, and there are a lot of songs that I have sung, the same songs in places that are wildly charismatic, that are wildly conservative. When I was a hardcore Calvinist, when I've been wildly liberal, when I've been all these different, in my own journey, when I've been wildly different. All of the time that all of that I've spent personally, still, you know, under the tent of being an Orthodox Christian. But I have been figuring out what I believe, and all the while have been singing these same songs. And so I've actually spent the last couple of years really deeply exploring some of those songs and going, how am I singing these same songs when I'm not always believing some of the same things? And, I actually just wrote a book that comes out in October, and based on some of my research on this, because I've been so curious of how can I be a fundamentalist and be an Anglican and still sing Great Is Thy Faithfulness? Like, why does that song work in both contexts? And I think it's because there's a deeper truth than our denominational differences and even, or than our spiritual opinions. I think God is using melody and mystery and memory that happens when we sing these songs and when we pass them down from generation to generation. He's communicating something to us that is deeper than our best attempts at figuring him out. And it's these ideas of God is with us in our suffering. God is with us in our joy. God is mysterious, God is majestic, and God is with us. God is with us, God is with us. And that's why we keep coming back to these songs, and that's why they work wherever we are.
What are you doing in terms of music today? I know you are a singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
Tell us about some of the work that you've been doing. I know you've been involved with a number of projects when it comes to hymns. Tell us about your work with hymns. And
yeah. Well, I write my own songs. I just released an album called Hold the Light. That's kind of a little best of my own music. And I'm just starting kind of recording my next record. And then I lead a group of a community of songwriters called Anchor Hymns, which is a kind of modern collective of songwriters. So Sandra McCracken's part of that group. Paul Balazs, Matt Maher, Taylor Lenhart, a bunch of amazing songwriters. And so we gather, and the idea is to write new sacred songs for the postmodern church. And what are songs that the church needs that maybe we don't have? So we write a lot of songs right now about, as the global church, you know, we have a lot of songs about how great God is and how much he loves us and how that makes us feel. But we don't have a lot of songs about loving our enemy. We don't have a lot of songs right now about evangelism. We don't have a lot of songs about giving. And historically, the church has sung those songs, and I think we need those songs. And so we gather and try to write based on old hymn texts. We try to write new songs that are fun to play, fun to sing, easy to learn, and have a spiritual depth, and that talk about these other kinds of topics. And so that's called Anchor Hymns, and we've put out a bunch of music, and we're a nonprofit, and we're pretty active, and that's really been a lot of fun.
Why is it important for you to do this work? Because that's something that's very unique, and I imagine it's not easy to write new songs when there's already a lot of hymns in our history of music.
Yeah.
Why is it important for you to be doing this work?
I don't necessarily, I'm not like the biggest fan of worship music. Like if when I put on music myself, I tend to listen to indie singer-songwriters or old rock and roll or whatever. But I am a part of a church, and I stand in church with my family and my kids, and we'll sing a song. And sometimes I'm like, this song isn't great. And I've worked in the music business for a long time. I was a record executive for about 10 years, and people would turn songs into me. I've had literally thousands of songs turned into me. And so I know when somebody just kind of quickly finished a second verse because they were hungry and they wanted to go to lunch, and they were like, we're going to finish, we're going to come back and actually finish that second verse. And then they don't. Mm-hmm. And so I'm standing there in church and we're singing a song, and I'm like, they didn't finish this song. I know they didn't. And we're all singing it. That line's dumb. And maybe not everybody else is aware of it, is thinking about it as critically as I am. And I know I'm a critic and I'm obnoxious and I drive my family insane because I get in the car and I'm like, guys, that song. And they're like, Dad. But I want us to sing great songs, because I think the songs that we sing, they get in our heads and they're with us all week. And, you know, we don't have the sermon stuck in our heads, but we have those songs stuck in our heads, and they teach us what we believe. And that helps us know who we are and what we're supposed to be doing and how we think and how we feel. And if we have a song in our heads that's reminding us to love our enemy, then when we come face to face with an enemy, we're going to know, I need to love them. I need to love them. And so we need to be singing those songs. And so it's important to me that my kids have great songs, that my friends have great songs, that I have great songs, because I think they shape us.
Yeah.
What makes a great song?
Ooh.
What makes a great song or a great hymn?
Oh, Andy, what makes a great song? How long do you have? It's a great melody. It's something that gets stuck in your head that you want to sing. It's a great phrase that is something that is memorable and that you instinctively know what it means, that you go, oh, yeah, I feel that too. The me too is something that we talk about in among songwriters, that you hear it and you go, yeah, that's how I feel. When somebody can put something to language that you've felt in your heart, but you've not been able to express. And you know when you hear it. So to me, a great song is a great melody, that that lyrical sense of me too. Those two together, and then when you can add, if you can add some kind of performance when somebody with an instrument or with their voice in particular can communicate it in a way that just feels really authentic and natural, and feels like they're not trying to sell you something, but they're just telling you a story, and they're telling you their own story. Man, there's nothing better than that. And we'll always gravitate towards those things till the end of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the songs from the concert we went to last night are still stuck in my head. So it's those catchy earworms, but the ones that are the truths, those truths that you want stuck in your brain.
I mean, you're going to talk to Sandra, I know, in a little bit. Like, Sandra writes these great songs that they're so simple. Like, she writes simple songs, but man, they get stuck in your head. Mm-hmm. These great, they'll just have one or two great lines where you're like, that's all I need. Mm-hmm. That's all you need.
Yeah, better to have that than some of the other things I could find in my Spotify playlist.
Right. Sometimes words, yeah.
Yeah, right. Now, what's the creative process? I know you work with a group of people, mm-hmm. and you have certain topics that you like to cover. What does that creative process look like for you and for your group?
Yeah, oh man. Well, I love gathering songwriters. That's one of my favorite things to do. And it's kind of my... It's one of the prime things that I have done here in Nashville for the last 10 years. And so I host a lot of songwriting camps, and so I gather songwriters, and I spend a lot of time working on crafting prompts. And so if I've got a room full of 20, 25 songwriters, what I'll do is I'll usually break them up into groups of three or four, and send them off into different rooms and say, all right, you got 3 hours to write and come up with at least the beginning of a song. But I want to give them as much information, kindling, you know, to start with, so that they have, something to write towards. Mm-hmm. And I learned early on that the more specific instructions I give them, the more likely we are to get something that's really useful. Mm-hmm. So, usually, like with Anchor Hymns in particular, I always give them the lyric to an old hymn. So I do a lot. I have this huge collection of old hymnals. So I just spend weeks digging through, looking for lyrics I've never read before. My goal is to give them a lyric that they've never seen. And I look for themes. So we'll spend like a morning. We're going to talk about one morning we wrote all songs that could be sung at funerals, which was like, well, this is... I've never done this before. Or we did all songs about evangelism, or all, you know, we'll do a topic. And then I'll go find songs that fit that theme. And then I'll find scriptures that kind of are tied to that song. So I'll give them the lyric and that scripture. And then they have 3 hours. And I'll often maybe give them a challenge too that says like, hey, you have to use this word, or you have to do like a section that's call and response. Or you have to have four verses, no chorus. Or I'll find some little thing where they have to be creative. And because I found that the more you limit somebody, a creative person, and we're all creative because we're made in the image of a creator, the more that you give somebody these tight parameters, the more that then you have to be creative.
Yeah.
And the more it's fun. It's actually fun to have those challenges to go, okay, well, we can't do a chorus, so I guess we got to do this. Oh, well, then we could do this. You know, it ends up being fun. So I find that the more work I do ahead of time to give them these prompts allows these incredible songwriters, you know, you got people like Matt Maher and Paul Bloch in the room, but then they've written hundreds and hundreds of songs. So it helps them to have this kind of set up for them. And then they come out 3 hours later and they've got this thing that they're just as surprised as anybody at, look what just happened. It's so fun.
Just sit in the room and listen to all the creativity.
There is nothing more fun than like, if everybody's got 3 hours to write and I'm usually writing too, but I'll kind of step out and I'll just walk around like a half an hour before we're done and kind of be like, all right, it's about lunchtime. And I just poke my ear in and listen to all these songs as they're just about being, you know, being finished. It's like walking around a maternity ward. It's like a bunch of babies are being born. You just hear all these newborns being crying, you know, like, listen to this. This is the first time this song's ever been sung. It's the most amazing thing. It's so fun. I wish everybody could experience it. And then we gather, as soon as we're done, we'll gather and everybody will play the songs for each other. And that'll be like often the first time the song's ever been sung all the way through. Cause usually people are just trying to finish a verse, finish a chorus. And so they might not have ever played it all the way through until they're playing it in front of their friends. And then we've got a room full of other songwriters who are all just as nervous and just as, so we all know what it's like. We've all got that awareness of how tender that moment is. And so somebody finishes a song and everybody just erupts and cheers. It's so fun. And we'll critique it later and we'll edit it. Because we need to come back and edit because we can't just sing the first draft because it's lunchtime. We need to come back and make sure that what we're singing is really, really great. But that initial moment is also really, really special and profound.
Yeah.
So you've written a book, you're working together on Anchor Hymns. Yeah. You spend some time in creative process with your fellow songwriters. What's next on the horizon?
Well, that's a lot. That's what I do. So my book is called How to Remember. Moody Publishers is putting it out on October 7th. So I'm about to start that, which I've never written a book before. This is my first time doing that. So I'm about to step into that season, which will be fun. And then I'm starting to write another one. And then Anchor Hymns, we're about to start our next writing and recording project, and then I tour with Andrew Peterson in December, every December. So we're about to get ready for our Christmas tour, and we're playing tonight, and I'm playing with Andrew tonight, and just write and make music and hang out with my friends. It's fun.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
How can we find your work, your music?
Well, I have a weird name. It's Osenga, O-S-E-N-G-A, but you can find me andrewosenga.com. I have a Substack where I write every week, Andrew Osenga, and then about to relaunch my podcast called The Pivot, where I talk to people and I ask them the question, what is something you've changed your mind about? And we have a big, long conversation about that, which is really fun.
That sounds very cool.
Our guest today, Andrew Osenga, singer-songwriter. Thank you so much for spending the time with us here at the Sing Conference. You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.
The Concordia University System is comprised of five universities of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Located across the United States, the universities offer more than 160 undergraduate and 50 graduate programs and approach learning from a Lutheran context with the goal of developing Christian leaders for the church, community, and the world. Learn more about your Concordia University System at cus.edu. The Concordia University System, education built on God's Word, cus.edu.